We've all had fierce and formidable women in our lives who have shaped who we are now. The Tech and Learning's Honor Roll podcast is dedicated to celebrating women who have shaped the education landscape more than you can possibly imagine. Who better to host this conversation than Drs. Keisha Ray and Frances Gibson, two fierce and formidable women who have been driving innovation in the field of the education world for more than 30 years. Please welcome our hosts, Drs. Keisha Ray and Frances Gibson.
Welcome, everyone, to episode number 6 of Tech and Learning's Honor Roll, a podcast that celebrates fierce and formidable women in education. I'm Keisha Ray.
And I'm Frances Gibson, and we're elated to have you join us in our podcast environment. In fact, we're hoping this podcast environment might even grow into your book club with inspiration from today's Shiro, Carol Jago. So let's learn a little bit more about Carol. Carol Jago has taught English in the middle and high school for over 32 years and has served as the Associate Director of the California Reading and Literature Project at UCLA. She has also served as the president of NCTE, which we all know is the National Council of Teachers of English, and the College Board's English Academic Advisory Committee. She has written numerous books. Make sure to tag and get some of those on your shelf from multiple spaces in her thinking, whether it's from poetry in the classroom to looking at multiculturalism to what's happening in the assessment arena. Carol has also written for the Los Angeles Times, and her essays continue to appear in many educational journals and online forums. She's the editor of the California English Journal of the California Associations of Teachers and has worked with the NAEP reading framework and their writing framework. She is an author of multiple series that many of us have in our classrooms and has received multiple awards, including the International Literacy Association's Assessment Thought Leader Award and the CEL Exemplary Leadership Award. She has also, of course, received the Lifetime Achievement Award from the California Association of Teachers of English, a teacher at heart. We are so excited to have her join and share her leadership story with us today.
Carol Jago is another outstanding Shiro in education. Carol, each week we explore models of leadership together, from what our guests see in the mirror, in other words, a reflection of themselves, mentors who have impacted them, and then we consider the mirror and mentors and turn that into movements we should all be watching that inspire or ignite maverick moments. It's our honor roll pattern of M.
And Keisha, don't forget, we also want to catch any edubabble that we use to make sure our listening community connects with what is being said and understood. And I caught one while I was introducing Carol. So Carol, I'm wondering if you could describe a little bit more, what is a Los Angeles Times education columnist?
Well, for a very long time, 12 years, every week, every Sunday night, I had to turn in 800 words about education. And, you know, I'm a practicing teacher, meeting 150 kids a day, grading papers. But I want to say that doing that improved my teaching. That discipline, because you can't just be there waving your finger at folks, telling parents what to do in an education column. You need to be reflective. And so what it caused me to do was look at my classroom, look at my students, and use that column to think, to reflect, to examine what went right, what went wrong, and to ask questions. And I really think that it was one of the best professional development experiences that I ever had.
Oh, wow. Thanks so much for that incredible definition and explanation, especially of how it kind of impacted you, your life for professional development. Now, we're going to start with our first M model. Carol, who are your role models and why?
When I think about a role model, they're the real people in my life. My amazing principal, Sylvia Russo, colleagues in my English department. But then there are also role models that I've never met. So I'm thinking about Marianne Wolfe, who now I've met and I'm working at UCLA with. But at the time when she was influencing my practice and my thinking about reading, she was my role model through her writing. And I think that that's something that continues to be true for me as a teacher. I also think that right now, there are a lot of younger educators who are my mentors, who are helping me think through things. I'm thinking about Bettina Love, Goldie Muhammad, Eve Ewing here in Chicago. These people, again, are really inviting me to rethink a lot of assumptions that I had about education. I can't thank them enough, even though I've never met them face to face.
I too just adore so many of those mentors that you mentioned. Marianne in particular, her wisdom. I remember reading Proust and the Squid with the story of science and reading in the brain, and can definitely see those connections. In fact, when I was working at LA Unified, we talked about the fact that there's been such a bold vision across the country around a college promise, but what is what I call our primary promise to our earliest learners? And she was just such an advocate to support many, many teachers in our district. And so, as you said, mentors come in so many forms. And I'm curious, who has been a great mentor to you, and what is it that they did that made them such a great mentor?
Well, you know, to continue on the idea of Marianne Wolfe, one of the things that now when I'm working with her, I feel has made her such a great mentor is she never stops thinking. She never stops researching. She tells a story in her new book, Reader Come Home, The Reading Brain in the Digital Age, that by the time she finished that first book about Proust and the Squid, The History and Science of the Reading Brain, by the time it came to print, she looked up and the world had changed in terms of digital reading and the rest. And that to me is what leaders in the field should be. People who never say, I've got it now. I understand this. But to be somebody who continues to think and be willing in a way to think with your mouth open, like to, because that's the mentorship, show to others in the field that you're still thinking through this and you're trying to understand how all these moving pieces in education fit together.
Well, and you know what? That sounds like something that you have done in your own career is seeing together all of these kind of experiences for your readers. And I'm wondering, when was that moment in time that you looked in the mirror and knew you were a leader?
You know, I'm the oldest of five children, so I've always been kind of bossy. So I'd look around me, whether it was at my school or in organizations that I belong to, and kind of think, well, you know, I could do this better, or I've got some ideas here. But very, very soon after assuming those leadership roles, you're humbled because you realize that a lot of the things you criticize as the status quo and why can't we move faster and why can't we change, you start to understand what the components are. And so I think that being a leader, there's a danger in hubris in aspiring to it. And the best leaders are actually quite humble about what they know and what they're still trying to discover.
You have always been so incredibly humble. And I'm thinking somewhere there's a magnet on a refrigerator that says, I'm not bossy. I just happen to be more capable than most everyone else. And when I think about just how you've mentored and led the work, especially in the literary realm, you're just an icon. And so you're definitely a woman that we all look up to. And I'm curious, how do you see women changing the world? Who are you looking up to?
Great. Kamala Harris, just right there. What a role model for so many. But I also think that there are areas where we really need more and more women in leadership roles. I think in education, we're seeing it. And that's very encouraging. We've moved away from just, coaches being all in full administration, being full of former coaches. And I And I think women are changing the field for because of that. And they understand things about nurturing and maybe about observing, you know, in terms of teacher evaluation, that was had a more paternalistic aspect to it. And so I think women are changing the educational world in that regard. But the area that I think most needs more women in it is the tech field. And right at the top, and that we need women's sense of ethos to imbue more humanity to big decisions. Not like, yeah, I'd like to see more women, more girls to code, and more women engineers, but leadership, like at the top. And it takes time, but it really requires women to advocate for other women and to spot those shining eyes. Gretchen Lowy at the Literature Project used to always talk about that the job of a leader is to find who will come next, your replacement, who can do this job as well as you can.
Well, I know my colleague here, Keisha Ray, has been a maverick in that area. Keisha, I'm wondering how are you connecting with that idea of the tech space and women and what Carol's been sharing with us?
Well, I agree with her. I don't think there's enough of us in it. But I also think that there's a great opportunity with young girls coming up in programs like Girls Who Code that will have a great opportunity to influence the field as, you know, as the years move on. So I think, you know, we weren't late at the game. I mean, one of us invented COBOL, but we for some reason haven't been able to get the same recognition that the men have at the table.
You know, Keisha, I think some of it too resides in us. So I'm from the old generation, and I didn't know I could do some of these things that I've done. And in my experience, my students do not have those same attitudes. They think they can do anything. And I put some of it down to sports. I would say, you know, in the time that in the 32 years I spent teaching high school English, I saw a significant change in girls willing to take up leadership roles, like leadership in a discussion and just grab the floor and hold on to it. And again, I noticed that those girls were soccer players, were water polo players. And so I think physical confidence plays out in the larger world of leadership.
Yeah, well, I know I definitely found my voice in the STEM field with my interest in wanting to be an astronaut and being corrected and told astrologer. And I said, no, I'm a Leo. I'm pretty certain about what I want to do. And then finding that energy in sports and volleyball. So definitely a lot of personal connections. As you think about this space and really how we take care of ourselves and how we lead, I'm curious to know more about what are your self-care routines? Because, you know, leading in this environment is so challenging, and breaking through those glass ceilings that we are shattering left and right are so important. But we also need to make sure that, you know, we take care of ourselves as female leaders. So what are some things that you do as you think about the space that you're in?
This is an unusual time where we're not meeting face to face, because I would have said that the communities I belong to, now being president of the National Council of Teachers of English, I continue to edit California English, that sit on that board. Those groups provided a lot of support. And so now that nobody's meeting face-to-face anymore, I belong to a group that they call themselves the Literacy Consultants Consortium, and it's been really powerful. And these are just voluntary meetings on Zoom where you feel it's a safe space. where you can talk about challenges you're facing, get inspired by what other people are doing. But there's a loneliness to leadership that I think that is very dangerous. It results in burnout. And I think that for me, at least, is really other people.
You've already been an inspiration to me. And I have some sentence starters for you.
Is this like a fill in the blank that we're giving an icon English teacher?
I was just going to say, we're going to tease her literary genius a little bit. And see, maybe, who knows, we could be writing the next great novel through these sentence starters. So here we go. An event that changed my world view.
Learning to read. I mean, books have changed my life. My world would be so narrow if it were just confined to my own experiences. And I continue to be just very avid reader. And I would say Isabel Wilkerson's latest book, Cast, had significantly contributed to changing my way of thinking about race in America and to see it as a cast. And so again and again, for me, it's what I find between the pages of a book that's made the difference.
But I know you have several bookshelves, and as you, if anybody looks at Pinterest or any social media, there's this great quote by you, and it says, "The thrill of opening a new book has never gone away." And I'm sure you can continue with that beautiful list. And I have some sentence starters to keep us going as well, Carol. So please answer this one for me. I became a stronger person after.
Well, I think when I became more articulate about my own practice, and it's something I really try to recommend to young teachers and people new to the field, that writing helped me have the words to explain why. When you sit down to write, you have to make an argument, offer evidence, explain how that evidence supports your claim. And when you are articulate, you're better able to kind of get what you want done, that you can command, let's say in a large group, you can command attention, you know how to marshal your thoughts. And I think that it's something that, you know, maybe is gender, there is some gender bias there, that not everybody listens as sharply when women speak in a large group than they do with a man. And so all the more reason for knowing how to craft a sentence in a way that commands attention.
You know, and that speaks to the discipline of journaling too, to get into that practice of writing. Okay, what about this one? My life improved when I
could afford to buy any book that I wanted. I have no restraint whatsoever. Shoot, I can't buy, who would buy shoes right now? Like, where am I going to wear shoes? I must buy 2-3 books a week. And that is, for somebody who grew up, you know, using the library, and libraries are wonderful. They save lives. I believe in public libraries, school libraries, classroom libraries. But the luxury, for me, that's luxury. That's being rich, is just being able, at the moment I want a book, to have it. That makes me feel very lucky indeed, very privileged indeed.
Well, I know books may be your second love, because my hunch is you're going to answer your first love with the next question. A decision that changed your life.
I would say was to stay in the classroom for 32 years. As a leader, you know, you always examine, should I get my administrative credentials? Should I, you know, move up the ladder? And one, I didn't want to do discipline. Like, that's just not, I'm not good at it. I don't have a tough skin. People shouting at me and I cry. But the other side of that is that students continue to teach me. The challenges of teaching well, every year, every group poses new challenges. And so I never found it boring. And most things are pretty boring. Like most people's jobs, think about all the people in law, they keep doing the same thing over and over again. And teaching is not boring if you are continually reflecting on how you could do it better. I mean, that's part of the chaos right now in schools, is your best teachers are killing themselves to try to do this right, to try to have the kind of instructional magic going on with their students with so much uncertainty all around them. So, but that really was for me, the heart of what everything I write about, everything that continues to obsess me.
We like that obsession, and so very true. Our students are the most incredible teachers, and all that you have learned from them, in turn, you've turned back to us as teachers. And while you say it might be chaos, I'm gonna share that it may be chaotic. Sometimes there's that chaos, and yet the order that you bring to it with your wisdom and your expertise. And I know I have so many of your books on my shelf and continue to share them with my friends and colleagues. And I'm wondering for my colleague here, Keisha, I'm always inspired when I talk to Carol, and I learn so much more about who she is, how she leads, and her insights into just changing the world for youth and community. And I'm wondering, what are some things that you're taking away right now?
Well, Carol, you have represented women so well in your work and your passion for reading and writing, and you've shared with so many and encouraged them to pursue their passions through reading your works. And I reflect on my own daughter, who's 1 year old and loves books, and she reads, air quotes, to me every day in her early childhood. And so I'm wondering if you have any final thoughts that you want to share with our audience, perhaps something you would even tell your childhood self.
It would be not to worry about perfectionism, because I think that is a trait that many women possess, and many kind of type A, high-powered women. You're not going to be able to be perfect. You just have to let it go. And because if you don't, you'll stop taking risks. And I think that risk taking, I think in my classroom, every year I'd teach a new book. It did not always go well. I did not always choose well, but it forced me to refresh what it is that we were doing. It forced me to be a curriculum developer one more time instead of just, teaching the same thing over and over again. And in that act of taking chances, getting it wrong, being willing not to be a perfectionist, there's actually growth. And isn't that what we want for students, what we want for our colleagues, what we want for ourselves?
You're perfectly imperfect, as they say, right? And as you think about those perfect imperfections, what are some things that you want us to be aware of in this world of influencers, as they say? What do you want to influence?
An influence I wish I could have more of would be to help teachers continue to be readers for themselves. Teachers have no time. They're overworked. They've got families of their own. But when we stop reading, we're going to forget those epiphanies, those ahas, those surprises that we find. And kids will see that you've gone stale. And so I really believe in book clubs for English departments, for whole faculties, for community leadership.
Well, I am certainly wondering what our listeners are reflecting on right now. What might be some of those perfect imperfections? And in fact, Carol, you've helped coach so many of us. So I've got a coaching question for our audience. And in the spirit of writing, what might the chapters of your leadership story be titled? So as you think about this journey, what are the chapters for yourself as a leader as we think about the chapters that Carol has shared with us today?
Well, that's a great question, my friend. And I'm already thinking about the varied chapters in my leadership. And I'm sure our listeners are too. You know, we can't thank Carol enough for joining us today and spending a little bit of time with us, sharing her amazing stories and her incredible wisdom.
Amazing indeed. And we want all of you to know that we appreciate you, our fierce listeners. And we know that you are going to lead with such inspired messages by hearing from this Shiro, Carol Jago. We're all looking forward to another Jago gem as she continues to publish and push our thinking.
I'm actually planning to buy her newest book, the book in question, Why and How Reading is in Crisis, today. We also want you all to join us for our next podcast, where we're going to highlight another Shiro in education and explore their M's. So please don't forget to follow our hashtag TL Honor Roll, R-O-L-E. And you can go to that hashtag and answer the coaching question that Frances posed. Until then,
be fierce
and be formidable.
The Tech and Learning's Honor Roll podcast is produced by Keisha Ray, Frances Gibson, and Christine Weiser. Audio production by Mitchell Tulin and AV Nation. Tech and Learning's Honor Roll theme music is by Madison Van Gundy. Find more episodes on techlearning.com and follow us at hashtag TL Honor Roll. That's TL Honor, R-O-L-E.